Okay, well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm really happy to be here this afternoon and to be giving the concluding talk of what has been a fantastic session. So thank you to the organizers. That was really, really nice. And I hope to end on a good note, too. All right, so for those of you who don't know me, I'm a soil biogeochemist and I work at the University of Alberta, so it's in Edmonton, about here, so pretty close to the southern boundary of the boreal forest. And I'm sure as we all know here, so the boreal forest, which occupies about half of Canada, is also a major store of carbon. And most of the carbon in boreal forest is stored below ground in the forest floor and the mineral soil. So really, any change in how much carbon these boreal forest soils can store potentially can have a major impact on global carbon dynamics. So this is why in my group over the past 15 years or so, a lot of our research has focused on understanding how boreal soil carbon may be responding to all of these disturbances that the boreal biome is currently experiencing, and in particular, vegetation shifts induced by climate change. So what I want to do this afternoon is show you a few examples of some studies we've done, so looking again at organic matter processes in boreal forest soils, using a combination of analytical approaches, NMR biomarkers, and isotopes. And we've heard already quite a lot today about isotopes and biomarkers. We've heard a little bit about NMR, so what I'm going to be doing is talk a little bit more about NMR. And how maybe we can combine these approaches in a very useful manner. So NMR by itself is not an isotopic technique, but it's taking advantage in the case of C13 NMR of a unique property of one of the isotopes of carbon, so in that case C13. So C13 has a non-zero spin, and thanks to that property, it actually is going to give a signal with NMR. So C12 is not visible with NMR, so again, it's thanks to the non-zero spin of C13 that we can actually characterize the chemical compositions of molecules that contain carbon. So to give you an example of the type of information we can get with NMR, so C13 solid state NMR, this is actually some of our earlier work, work conducted by Kirsten Hannam, who characterized the chemical structure of forest floor and the spruce and aspen. And aspen and spruce are two, three species that are very, very common to the boreal forest of Western Canada. So just to quickly illustrate, any atom of C13, so depending on its chemical environment, is going to be resonating at a slightly different frequency that you can see here on the x-axis, and this is reference to a reference material. So for instance, if you look at the carbonic peak here, which is the most oxidized form of carbon, we actually found that carbonyl carbon was significantly greater under aspen than under spruce, that we attributed to a greater, faster oxidative degradation under the aspen canopy. Underneath this maybe routine, if I may call them that, cross-polarization magic angle spinning spectra, so the CP mass spectra here, we also have some example of dipolar dephasing technique, which is very useful for forest floor because it allows us to differentiate in the aromatic region here between lignin and tannins. And using that technique, we were able to detect the presence of lignin with a little peak at 56 ppm. You kind of have to look at this spectra closely. While on the spruce, we detected the presence of tannins with their double peak at 145-153 ppm. To give you another example of how NMR can be applied to understanding organic matter processes, this is now work by Laure Chousset-Marianne Adin, who looked at the influence of early spring fires on organic matter processes and forest floor, this time in eastern Canada. So that was work that was done in northern Quebec in Black Spruce Forest. What you can see on both of these spectra are a very strong peak at 130 ppm. So this is characteristic of carbon from charcoal or black carbon. The difference between these two spectra is, again, with that more routine CP mass analysis, what you have is the polarization of the very abundant protons is actually transferred to the very limited C13 atoms. So the advantage of this technique is that the signal is greatly enhanced, which is why it's become really popular looking at organic matter structure. The disadvantage is that it's only semi-quantitative. So specifically, carbons that don't have a lot of protons around them, such as aromatic carbons, are going to be underestimated. So this other technique here, DP or direct polarization, in that case, we are polarizing directly the C13 atoms. The advantage is that it's now quantitative. The disadvantage is that it can take a long time to acquire even information for one sample, sometimes up to several days. Nonetheless, Laure, using that technique, was able to quantify charcoal in these soils in the forest floor and the mineral soil. All right, so when we think about biomarker analysis and NMR, these are really two very different approaches. And biomarker analysis that we can get, for instance, I don't know if you see on the graph, for instance, with GCMS or pyrolysis GCMS, this is going to give you very detailed information on a few features of soil organic matter. But you may have a hard time building up the overall photo again or picture again. On the other hand, NMR here is going to give you a nice macromolecular fingerprinting of the soil organic matter. But some people may argue that the picture is a little bit blurry. So obviously, right, the point I'm trying to make here is combining both approaches is the best to characterize organic matter structure. Just going to give you a few examples of some studies where combining both techniques, I think, can be very useful. NMR can be combined to biomarker studies, looking at lignin monomers, looking at N-alkanes, and I'm so happy I actually talked about cutin and suberin. So for N-alkanes and cutin and suberin, more specifically, the biomarker analysis can be related to the alkyl carbon region of the NMR spectra. Obviously, in addition, the biomarker analysis can give us some information about the origin of the organic matter, such as the case of cutin suberin, looking at above ground versus below ground inputs. And for that last example, I will refer to you to a poster we are presenting later today, and I'm very much looking forward to further discussion because this is actually a new method we are now using in my lab because we got that. Very nice, I think. Pyrolysis GCMS installed not that long ago. Okay, so far I've talked about NMR and biomarkers. For the second and last part of this presentation, I'm going to show you some results of stable azotope probing of phospholipid fatty acid. So pretty traditional approach with a little twist. I'm also going to show you how we can maybe combine NMR to that approach, specifically by quantifying the incorporation of the label into the plant tissues. So as I mentioned earlier on, the boreal forest is currently subjected to many, many disturbances. And this is a map of Alberta, by the way, just in case you didn't recognize it. And the boreal forest is highly susceptible to global warming. So even with a very conservative approach, so estimating an increase in 2 degrees Celsius by 2080, which I'm sure all of you will agree is extremely conservative, very important shifts in vegetation are expected. So what you see here is that the boreal forest in green here is expected to shift northward. And within the boreal forest, deciduous trees are expected to replace coniferous trees. So in our case, in Alberta, aspen would be replacing white spruce. So we were interested in understanding what that shift in vegetation might mean in terms of how the microbial community would process these different type of litter. So to answer that question, what we did was to label aspen litter, so aspen seedlings in reality, so we had leaves and roots. So we labeled aspen litter and we applied it to a soil that had formed originally under spruce. And so that was to simulate the shift in vegetation, and we compared that to a native soil under aspen. So here comes a little twist. We produced our litter using pulse labeling. For us, it was too expensive to produce it with continuous labeling. We don't have the labeling facility to do that. But our approach, we felt worked really well. So what we did was to pulse label our aspen seedlings, and we followed incorporation of the C13 label into the aspen tissue using C13 enema, which I've already talked about. So in that case, this is direct polarization. And again, this is especially, I think, adapted to this type of study because what we see is the added C13. As I've already mentioned, the C12 is invisible with NMR. So briefly, this is actually for the leaves. I'm only talking about leaves for this talk, but we also have results for roots. For the leaves, the label after 2 hours of the pulse labeling was mostly, not surprisingly, incorporated in the carbohydrates, and you can see that by this very high peak in the O-alkyl carbon region. But after 7 days, there was redistribution of the label across the different biopolymers. So using that technique, we were able to generate that litter quite cheaply, I have to say, that we felt was uniformly labeled and that had sufficient labeling for what we were interested in, which was to follow it and its incorporation into PLFA that do not require a lot of labeling. So again, the result I'm showing today, this is a lab incubation. We have done some field incubation, so I'll be happy to talk about that after. What I'm going to show you now is results from the lab incubation. So we had soils, forest floor, sampled under spruce and aspen, and we added to this flask, so the C13 enriched leaves and roots. We also had C13 enriched glucose, and then we had control flasks where we had no added substrate. And we followed over 2 months. We let the incubation go for 2 months. We followed respired CO2, measured C13 CO2 to quantify how much of the respired CO2 was coming from the labeled substrate. And we looked at incorporation of that substrate into microbial PLFA, looking at carbon-specific azotopic analysis of the PLFA. So now for some results of this incubation, looking at respiration fluxes. First of all, I should say that all the flask, the aspen and spruce, basically respired the same amount of CO2, right? So total CO2 was comparable between aspen and spruce. What was different was how much of the CO2 was coming from the C13 substrate. So this is what's showing here. So on the y-axis, it's the percent respired coming from the substrate. And in the three cases, so glucose, leaves, and roots, we saw the same result, which was that the aspen microbial community, so the microbial community present in the native aspen soil, respired more of the C13 substrate than the spruce. And the effect was pretty short-lived with the glucose, but it actually lasted throughout the 2 months of incubation for the leaves and the roots. So the aspen here are the orange cycles, while the spruce are the little blue-green triangle. So this is for the respiration fluxes. Now in terms of incorporation of the label into the PLFS, so this is showing following glucose addition. So what you have on the y-axis are all the individual PLFS we were able to detect. And on the x-axis, this is the enrichment of each PLFA compared to the control flask. So again, aspen in orange here and spruce in green. Well, first of all, I should say, both communities rapidly incorporated C13 glucose, values were positive. Maybe more interestingly, the values were more positive for the aspen community, so the community in the native aspen soil, than in the spruce soil. And again, that was true after 4 hours, but that was also true following 2 months of incubation. So indicating that the aspen community was very efficient at recycling these C13. Slightly different way to show the same results. So again, C13 enrichment after glucose addition. X-axis now is the PLFA concentration, and on the y-axis is the enrichment, again compared to the PLFA, each individual PLFA in the control flask. And again, I think you can readily see that enrichment, so incorporation of the substrate, was greater in the microbial community of the aspen soil compared to the spruce soil. So finally, this is now showing results following aspen leaf addition. And in that case, which we found was very exciting, we actually saw the opposite results. We actually saw that the enrichment in the soil and the spruce, so following the aspen leaf addition, was greater than in the aspen soil indicated in orange here. So just to conclude and bring these results from this lab incubation together, I think it's important to relate these results to the concept of substrate utilization efficiency. Also, following this morning's talks, I hope I don't get into trouble. So substrate utilization efficiency, this is the ratio of how much of the substrate is incorporated into the microbial biomass divided by microbial biomass plus how much is respired. So from our results, we saw that the spruce soil respired less of the aspen leaf litter, but it assimilated more for growth, so in its PLFA. And I'm not showing the calculations here, but when we actually went through the calculation, which was involved and actually also involves very high standard deviation considering the method, but we felt confident that the substrate utilization efficiency of the aspen litter is higher for the spruce community than the aspen. So as has been postulated before, if we relate SUE to the formation of more stable soil organic matter, it is a substrate with a higher SUE that eventually do end up making most of that stabilized soil organic matter. So for our lab incubation results, based on that, we can speculate that as aspen replaces spruce, we're going to see an increase in SUE of the litter. So again, just based on this lab incubation, we can speculate that more of that litter carbon may be sequestered in soil organic matter. To conclude, I'd like to thank my collaborators, field studies in Alberta, Barbara Kistruck, and Quebec, Alison Munson. I also would like to thank my NMR colleagues, Rod Vasilishan and Si Wong Ho. And I guess just to conclude, I'd just like to reiterate that I think it's really interesting and very useful to indeed combine different analytical approaches with NMR, given us that overall fingerprinting biomarker, you know, that more detailed info as well as information about the sources and obviously isotopes being able to, let us quantify actual carbon fluxes through the soil. Thank you.